Welcome to the show. I'm Shane Norton, aka the Sports Card Nobody, and this is another episode of the Sports Card Nobody podcast. Well, first and foremost, something I would like to say before I get into any part of this episode is I talked about how my daughter had an ear infection on a previous show, and man, the amount of people who've reached out hoping that she's doing better and all those sorts of things is amazing. I am just so excited that there's so many awesome people that listen to the show, so many people that care to reach out and say such kind words. But fear not, she is feeling so much better, and she's on the antibiotic that we have to give her, and boy, is that fun. She feels good enough to slap that out of our hands when we're trying to give it to her twice a day. So she's back to her normal self, doing tremendous. So thank you again for everybody who reached out just with the nice words. It really means a lot to me to know that there's such kind people out there. So that's the quick update there. Daughter's doing great. The Norton family's doing phenomenal. The nobodies over here are all trucking along, which is tremendous. But all right, coming up later on the other side of this little intro here, I'm pretty excited because hockey is here. Hockey's kicking off. You all know I am not the biggest hockey fan in the world, but I have on one half of a tremendous podcast, which is the Hockey Cards Gong Show. I have Josh from that show coming on, basically giving us a full-on primer for the hockey season. We're talking rookie cards, GOAT cards. We're talking storylines to be excited about for the upcoming season. Dude really has a ton of incredible information. His show is great. He does that with Troy, the Hockey Cards Gong Show. If you care about hockey in the least bit, or if you just want to know more about it, you should definitely go check them out. But all right, back to the nobody world of sports, though, before we get off to the hockey talk. Baseball, man. Holy moly, we are coming up on the division series round of the playoffs. The wild card rounds are all wrapped. Every single one of them was an upset, with the exception of one. What an insane round that was. Brand new to baseball, they had the three-game series where the top seed got to have a home game in all three of the games. Only one of those series needed three games, and that was the Mets and the now upcoming opponent for the Dodgers. That is the Padres. Pretty wild, man. That series went three. The Padres really smacked around Max Scherzer in the first game. Jacob DeGrom was able to do his thing in the second game. And then in the third game, Joe Musgrove, man, was he cheating? I don't know. They checked him. His ears looked a little red. It's a little fishy. But dude threw seven shutout innings of one-hit ball. It was like a record for the most scoreless innings with one hit or less in a winner-take-all game. I don't know. Those stats get convoluted, but basically, Musgrove dominated, and he's the reason that the Padres were able to win that series. And now they go on to face my Dodgers. Man, that's always scary because I think the Dodgers have won something like nine straight series against the Padres. They dominate them. Can they do it again in the playoffs? I think so. They're the better team, but man, October baseball is quite quirky. But really, really fun stuff going on in baseball. In the wrestling world, we just had Extreme Rules. Did you guys watch that? I know a lot of you did, because I know I have a lot of wrestling fans that listen to this show, but holy crap, let's not bury the lead. He's back, baby. Bray Wyatt is back to the wrestling world. He's back on WWE television, and I don't know, a lot of debate already about whether or not this was the biggest and loudest pop in the history of returns. Top three, top four, top five, whatever it is, it was awesome. It was wild. I mean, Bray Wyatt is a creative dude. He is just really doing things that are just so different than what we see every single day in the wrestling world. He's a true talent, a brilliant mind who can go in the ring. It is awesome that he's back. I can't wait to see what he is going to do with Triple H running the ship now. It feels like Bray is going to be able to spread those creative wings and just do his thing and keep getting pops like he did on Saturday. How awesome. I mean, the when he lifted the mask, the holy shit chants were at a level that it was awesome. If you care about wrestling at all and you didn't get a chance to see it, you should definitely YouTube it. Find that clip. It will get the hairs on your neck to stand up. Bray Wyatt is back. Let's go. Lastly, just want to touch on, I've been talking about how bad the 49ers have been. Well, they've won a couple of games now, which is great. They just got another win against the Carolina Panthers, who immediately fired their coach and they're in disarray. But the Niners are apparently competing this year. The defense is as good as we expected. Man, that's true, although there's a lot of injuries coming out of that game. It is what it is, but there's a lot of things for me to suddenly be excited about in the NFL. I think I might get my first win in one of my main leagues in fantasy football as well. Things are turning around for this nobody. It's a good time to be a nobody because sports are treating me okay. We'll see how the NLDS goes against the Padres. I might have to cancel the show depending how that goes, but you know how that goes. All right, so my top five, since I have a guest on, is being saved for the show. And in fact, this time I'm actually handing off the duties. I'm letting Josh from the Hockey Cards Gong Show run with the top five because it's hockey related and I have nothing to add when it comes to hockey conversations. But like I said, there's so much incredible information. If you care at all about hockey, you want to learn more about hockey cards, there is so much you can take away from this episode. I hope you stick around for the interview and let me know how it went. You know, let me know. Reach out. You can find me at Sports Card Nobody on Instagram. I'm at Sport Card Nobody on Twitter. You could leave me a review. Let me know what you think of it at your podcast hub of choice. You know, do the damn thing. Like, subscribe, and do all that stuff because the show has been growing because of you fans that just share this. And that's the best thing, man. When you share this with friends, you share this with family, you share this with anybody you think might care about anything I have to say here. I see it. I can feel it. I can see the show grow. It is so awesome. So thank you so much to everybody who's taken the time to pass this along to someone you think might care. But with that said, I'm going to delay no further. I have Josh from the Hockey Cards Gong Show. Let's talk some hockey. All right, welcome back to the show. Like I said earlier, I am so very excited because depending when you listen to this, hockey is starting tomorrow or today, or maybe it was yesterday. But nonetheless, hockey is here. It is right around the corner. I don't know much about hockey. As you all know, I am about as fair weather as it gets. I don't even know much about my own team, the Los Angeles Kings, but I'm rocking that jersey if you're watching this on YouTube tonight. But I am bringing in somebody to help prepare me and you for the upcoming hockey season. I've got Josh from Hockey Cards Gong Show. Josh, thank you so, so much for coming onto the show.
Hey, Shane. Thank you for having me. It's a treat. You've put a lot of pressure on me to get you ready for hockey, but I'll do my best.
Well, listen, man. So I talk about my buddy Justin all the time, Suplexes and Slapshots on Instagram. He got into the hobby because of my passion a little while ago, and he started gravitating towards hockey. He's a big hockey fan, so he started wanting to buy hockey cards. And one of the biggest voids that there is in the hobby is content for hockey specific stuff. He found your show, he turned me on your show, and as somebody that doesn't really pay attention to hockey as intently as I do, you know, the wrestling and baseball and football, I've still found that I listen to your show every week. I love the stuff that you guys are putting out. The content that you make is really informative. It's really fun. You guys have a really good back and forth between you and Troy, who unfortunately had to blow us off tonight. But nonetheless, I am so stoked to have you. And Justin loves your show, and he loves it for a good reason. And that's a big thing, man. You guys are filling a void. What is it, you know, how did you get into that hockey-specific space? You know, what is your sort of history with hockey and hockey cards?
Yeah, that's a good question. So Troy and I are both from Minnesota, which hockey is a part of life here and you grow up around it. And the reason actually why Troy's not here is he's coaching hockey tonight. So very fitting, I guess, from our theme.
All right, we'll give him a pass. That's a good
reason. Give him a pass on that. Other than that, though, we, like I said, you grew up around hockey when you're from Minnesota. We collected sports when we were young. As families, we're really good family friends. We had, for a number of years, season tickets to the Minnesota Wild. And during the pandemic, like lots of people, I guess, who are my age, we found ourselves out of boredom, you know, on lockdown, coming back to the hobby a little bit. And we were just trading texts every day. Him and I are both data guys. So we like to look up trends and try to find opportunities, whether if even if for like even a collecting perspective, right? You want to get the best deal,
right?
Or different cards we could flip. And one day early last May, out of the blue, I don't know why it hit me, I just asked Troy if he would ever want to try a hockey cards podcast. And he said, sure. So we went out and bought microphones and wrote an outline for an episode and recorded it and posted it. And honestly, I don't know how you started your show, Shane, but there was no great plan or no big, it's literally been just do it. And from there, it's kind of taken a life of its own.
Yeah, that's almost exactly how my show started as well. You know, I was looking for excuses to dive deeper into the hobby. I decided to try a YouTube channel, which I've talked a lot about on my show, and I just went for it. You know, it was just like, all right, I'm just going to start recording. And the YouTube channel seemed like a great idea until I couldn't keep up with what I had decided I wanted to do, and that eventually evolved into this podcast. And so for anybody out there who's interested in content creation, I always say just get down, sit down, and do it. Once you start trying it, you'll figure out what works and what doesn't. But you can sit back and think about it and plan for as much as you want. Until you're doing it, you're not really going to get your feet wet. So just dive in. So that's exactly what I did, just like you guys. So nice job. So how's it been going? How's the reception to it been, especially being a part of the hobby that's a little less talked about? You know, there's a little less attention on the hockey market. So how have you found the reception?
The reception has been great, and I think you've really hit the nail on the head. There's a huge void in the hockey card market. One thing about hockey, the segment, I guess, of the sports card market that is hockey, is it's got super passionate collectors, like your friend Justin, and there's people that really, I think they, as much as I would like to think we're okay at podcasting, I think we really just found an opportunity to fill a huge void within the marketplace.
Yeah, and you guys definitely have. So, you know, kudos to you on that. Again, you know, not to talk too much about my own story, but it's kind of similar where I felt like as somebody in my level of collecting, all of the content was around $20,000 deals at the National, which was nowhere close to the world I was living. So I felt like I would like to talk to somebody who's more of a nobody, hence the sports car nobody. So I completely applaud you guys for finding avoid and filling it with your guys' knowledge, which is amazing. And I love something you actually already said. You know, you guys are really data driven, and you guys really you dive into the numbers, and on your Instagram you're constantly sharing all the different posts about the market and the things that have gone up and gone down. One of the most recent things was talking about the dips. You know, did you go ahead and buy the dips? You were sort of challenging your followers to, which is great. But what's key is that data isn't always just about investments, right? It's not always about just trying to flip. But if you are a collector, you'd rather not be the guy that spent, you know, $400 on a card when 2 weeks later it was $200. If you plan to keep it forever, it's still nice to save whatever you can anywhere you can. So the information that you guys are putting out there is tremendously, tremendously helpful.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, we kind of feel, you know, our goal is not to be a podcast or social media platform or account, I guess, about flipping or investing or collecting. It's really to cover all of it. And we would like to think that the information we're looking up should, like you said, benefit everybody, right? Because right. We, even if you're a diehard collector and you never, ever plan to part with your collection, we're still obsessed with the value of these cards.
It's just built in.
If there is a grail piece that you're looking to get, like you talked about, you mentioned briefly buying the off-season dip, if you know that that card is going to go down 30% naturally, and like in the case of hockey in June or July and August every year, why not buy it at a discount when you know the market is going to be soft for that card?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a truth that holds for pretty much every sport too. You know, baseball, the off season's when you want to buy. Football, you don't want to buy right leading up to it with all the hype that kicks in. You want to buy in the off season. It's a very, very common thing. And again, just putting that information out there is so helpful. And again, specifically for hockey, which is great. But speaking of hockey, for someone like me that is really on the outskirts of the hockey world, like I said, I'm as fair weather as it gets. I know when the Kings are doing well, I start to pay attention a little bit more. When I lived in Los Angeles, I got to go to finals games and go to playoffs games and pretend I was the biggest fan in the world. But nonetheless, I really am on the outside sort of looking in terms of knowledge. But somebody for me, where would you steer me if I did want to start grabbing some hockey cards? You know, obviously there's Kings cards that I specifically can get, but more specifically, like what type of sets should I be looking for? What types of inserts are big in the hockey world? Where would you send me?
Sure, that's a great question. I guess how I break it down is, and I think this, whether you're collecting wrestling like I know you do, or baseball, basketball, football, one of the things that you learn over time and usually takes years of experience is that there's certain core cards within that segment that are really kind of considered the, if you want, like the premier rookie or the big chases that everyone values, right? And especially today when you could, if you're a football collector, there's 6,000 Trevor Lawrence rookie cards, but there's only a handful that are really kind of considered the flagship rookies or upper echelon rookies. And it takes usually a long time to know that. In hockey, there's really, I would break it down at its most simplest form to three cards. The first one is the most accessible. It's the considered the flagship rookie of a hockey player, and it's the Young Guns card. It's a brand that's been around since 1990. It's pretty established. I think most people that aren't even hockey collectors have heard the term Young Guns.
For sure.
So it's got really good visibility, I think, within the whole sports card market. And what makes, I think, the Young Guns really unique is that it has this real sweet spot of being a little bit short printed. So its pack odds in Upper Deck's flagship products are 1 out of 4 packs. And in any flagship set, so Upper Deck does 3 flagship sets a year, kind of a beginning of the season, middle, and end. Beginning is called Series 1, then Series 2 in the middle, and then extended at the end of the year. Each of those has 50 Young Guns within the checklist of each set. And then your pack odds are 1 in 4. So it's kind of changed. It hits a sweet spot of being pretty accessible, but not in every single pack either. Mm. And so they're easy to get. They do have value, right? A Connor McDavid Young Guns PSA 10, even at a population count of 2,400, which is pretty high for hockey, is worth $3,500 right now. So there's a little bit of value, but it's also accessible. It's not like you're chasing gold prisms or something like that, right?
Sure, sure.
So,
I just got a quick question. So you said there's 50 Young Guns in each set in Series 1, in Series 2, and then in extended?
Yeah, so right now, it seems last year or two, that's been the case where okay. So it'll be 150 rookies a year, essentially.
Okay. So is that typically how many rookies are coming into the league in a year, or are they just kind of parsing it down to the 50 that people are going to want and then sort of alter, you know, from Series 1 to Series 2 and then the extended?
Yeah, hockey is not as straightforward from a rookie perspective as, let's say, football is. Mm-hmm. I would say it's really similar to baseball, meaning so that by the time a player's Young Guns rookie card comes out, they could have played in a few games the previous season or even a couple games the season before that. It really has, I think, I don't know the exact formula Upper Deck uses. I'm not even sure they publish that. But it comes down to when they're really going to be considered a full-time NHL player. So if you look at, I'll give you a quick example. One of the Rookie of the Year candidates this year will be a guy named Matty Beniers from the Seattle Kraken.
Okay.
He played the last 10 games of last season and did really well. So Upper Deck put him in the checklist for Series 1. He'll be one of the first 50 Series 1 Young Guns for 2022-23 that comes out early in November. And he has a lot of hype because of how he played in that sort of NHL audition at the end of last season.
Interesting. All right. So that's the flagship sort of stuff. Now, what about like higher end stuff? If you're interested in that realm.
Yep. From there, it goes, the middle tier product would be a set that Upper Deck makes, because Upper Deck is the only company that owns the license for hockey cards. And they make a set called SP Authentic. And within that, there's the Future Watch Auto, which is numbered to $9.99. So one thing about the Young Guns rookie card out of the flagship products is there's no autograph versions of those.
Okay.
So this is really the first really true rookie auto, and very collectible, very sought after. They can, you know, an Ovechkin Future Watch Auto from 2005 is worth anywhere from 6,000 to 13,000, depending on what grade or if it's graded or raw at this point. So they can have decent value to those too. But yeah, that would be really the first kind of true rookie auto. And then from there, Upper Deck's premium product, which would be akin to National Treasures or Flawless, is called the Cup. And that's where you're going to have your high-end rookie patch autos, typically numbered to out of 99. And those are, you know, they're not on par with Justin Herbert, National Treasures, one of one, but the Connor McDavid NHL logo is worth about $250,000 right now. So that's other than like a Wayne Gretzky rookie or Bobby Orr rookie, as far as modern hockey cards go or ultra modern go, those would be kind of that's the most valuable ones. The other kind of little nugget that I think is super interesting about the Cup is Upper Deck also owns the Exquisite brand. And if you ever take time to look at sales or card or the value of Exquisite cards, not in hockey, because at a time Upper Deck produced basketball cards and football cards too. I can't remember the number off the top of my head, but it's something like the top 15 sales of Exquisite all time were more than $20 million combined. Wow. So really some of the most valuable sports cards that have ever been produced have been under that Exquisite brand. So the other thing Upper Deck is doing is they are putting Exquisite inserts into the Cup. So you can't get a Anthony Edwards or LaMelo Ball rookie in Exquisite, but you can get a Kirill Kaprizov or some of the Moritz Seider or some of the other contemporary hockey rookies.
Okay. That's fascinating. So they don't do an Exquisite specific, though. It's an insert within the Cup is what you're saying, right?
Yeah, they have a little bit of a brand problem in that they've established the Cup as their premier brand.
Mm-hmm.
And if they released an Exquisite set, it would kind of kill the Cup.
Sure. So how's the reception to that being an insert as opposed to being a its own thing? Hockey fans typically love it.
I think so. I don't know if hockey fans quite, it's hard to speak for everyone, because now you're getting into, like you talked about the reason why you started your show, you're getting into a whole different level of collector, sure. Right? So the person that buys and sells and trades or collects the $20, $30, $40, $50 Young Gun is a lot different type of collector that's buying a $250,000 Connor McDavid.
Sure. Yeah. That's
And I'm more in your realm than that realm. So I don't even know if I can speak for those people real well. Good question, though.
Well, then I actually have a follow-up question to that. So we're going to play a quick side game, dumb or smart. So my buddy, Justin, like I said, is, big hockey guy, and he sends me stuff quite a bit when he thinks it's something I might like. And I don't know how many months ago it was now. He had sent me a link to an eBay thing. I was like, you should check out this card. And I saw it was Quentin Byfield. It was a rookie card. Turns out it was an Exquisite card, and it was a gold number to 99. So I figured I'd make an offer on it. And I ended up getting this guy. So what
nice.
Do you think?
Nice. That's out of Black Diamond.
Okay. Out of Black Diamond. So the Exquisite name is then in a few different things?
Yes. And so they have Exquisite in a few sets. Black Diamond. Black Diamond is a middle tier set from Upper Deck. Okay. The high end like rookie patch autos from Exquisite will only be in the Cup.
Gotcha.
I love it. Exquisite is my favorite brand, so I'm a little biased in my, you know, I think that there's good value to that card. If you're looking at a card that is just a base card base or serial number card, doesn't have an auto, doesn't have a patch, I don't think you can do much better than that, especially if you're a bifield collector.
Sure. Yeah. So I got that. I forget what the ask was on it. It was way too high, but I offered something like $200 and I got it for somewhere around that price. No idea what the market is. I just thought, all right, I guess I'll go for it. And I got it. So I don't know. So what do you think? Dumb or smart?
It's all going to depend. It's a big year for Byfield. It's going to depend how he plays. If he does well, it could be a great pickup. If he struggles a little bit, it might not be so great, but that's just the nature of what we do, right, in collecting.
Exactly right. Yeah, if you're ever trying to, you know, if you're ever trying to make a dumb or smart play, it only works out if it works out, you know. It sort of is what it is, especially with young players, prospecting rookies and all that, and that is true for every single sport, wrestling included, you know. So, but nonetheless, I thought it'd be fun to share that card here. But all right, so let's move on a little bit. You actually touched on this a little bit in your answer, because I want to talk a little bit more about sort of the history of the hockey hobby. You touched on like Gretzky rookies, and you touched on, I think you mentioned Bobby Orr in there. But if someone wants to build out more of a GOAT collection, you know, where would you go? I assume Gretzky is kind of the number one card to get. But even he has like two cards, right? The OPG versus the Tops, which is still true in some of the wrestling cards as well. What kind of advice would you give to somebody who might be more interested in buying vintage hockey cards?
You're 100% right. Gretzky is the GOAT of hockey. One of the things we track every month is the top sales by player. And if you look at, he's number one, he's been, since we started tracking, number one every month. And he typically sells three times the amount of cards that Connor McDavid sells, who's number two. So he's very much in that number one spot as far as desire, you know, who collectors are going after. This, it's funny you asked that. This summer we did a series and kind of tried to figure out who we think is the Mount Rushmore of hockey, and did a went by position. It took multiple weeks and finally settled on Gretzky, of course, and then Mr. Hockey, Gordie Howe, who was a 1951 rookie. His Parkhurst, one of them just sold in the Golden auction that closed the other day. And then Mario Lemieux, who the great Pittsburgh Penguin center, and then Bobby Orr, who's considered the greatest defenseman of all time. So those would be the four on the Mount Rushmore. When you talk about Gretzky having two different cards, that really comes down to the Tops versus OPG variations of that card. OPG was a Canadian confectionery company that started in the early 1900s and eventually started to dabble into sports cards and ended up doing a licensing deal with Topps in 1951, where essentially Topps would distribute hockey cards to the U.S., OPG to Canada. And what makes it a little bit confusing, like in the case of many cards, but especially the Gretzky rookie, is they, for all intents and purposes, look identical.
Right.
Just one will have a Topps logo, the other one will have OPG. There are some subtle differences in maybe how they were cut or from the sheet, but in general, the hockey collecting space has voted with their wallets and said that the OPG is more desirable. There's theories that the print runs were smaller, or I don't know, just because Canada's the you know, the main country for hockey, or you know what the actual reason is. But if you look at, and the Gretzky rookie is a great example, there's, of the thousands and thousands that have been sent into PSA, of the OPG 1979 rookie, there's two PSA 10, there's two OPG 10.
Oh,
there's exactly two of each. The last sale for the OPG rookie was $3.75 million. The last sale for the PSA 10 was around $1.2 million, I believe.
Wow,
so it's a big value difference there.
Which one did you buy?
Yeah. The one that's bent in half and has a corner ripped off is more my budget.
Nice. And now that's actually a pretty counterfeited card too, right?
I'm sure. Yeah. You know, I would say counterfeited and probably altered in a lot of cases too, whether it be trimmed or like one of the clear ways to tell if a OPC Gretzky rookie is altered is if actually the edges are sharp.
Okay.
When those cards were cut from the sheet, they were cut with piano wires. And so actually the edges should be a little frayed and soft, which is the how the card was cut and how they appeared in the pack. I'm not a Gretzky expert. I know, like, and there's Jordan experts in basketball, and I'm sure there's football, like people that know just tons and tons about that specific card. I guess I know enough to maybe make me dangerous.
That's fantastic. All right, so let's move on to something a little bit more more broad. In general, the sports card market has taken a bunch of hits. You know, the huge boom that we experienced in 2020 going into 2021 was really unprecedented. We saw a huge influx of people buying, of content creators. I mean, the space really exploded. And a lot of people are saying now that we're actually probably in a recession. How has the hockey market been doing as most of the card world has been going down?
Yeah, surprisingly really good. Where the hockey market, if you look at like the Card Ladder Hockey Card Index, it's actually up, I think, about 1.5% year to date. I have a few theories on why that is. I think the biggest thing is hockey has always been a little bit more steady Eddie, if that makes sense. So in the late 2020 and early 2021 price boom, it didn't take off like a rocket ship, like maybe basketball cards did. Or I know like you like wrestling, like when how crazy it was when WWE Prism came out. That doesn't really happen in hockey. And so I think that where maybe some of those huge price increases are pulling back a little bit right now, hockey's just stayed a little steadier. I also think that the values aren't obviously as high as in other segments. And so as maybe it got really price competitive to be a collector in basketball or football, especially for investors that are looking to make money, it's a lot cheaper entry point to come into hockey. And then the final thing is, and it's maybe more of a hope, but I think that there's a lot of growth opportunity for hockey. I think the NHL is finally understanding how to market its product in the modern world we live in. And I'm actually hopeful that the hobby can grow quite a bit over the next few years.
So that actually leads right into the next question really, really well, because last year was a pretty big moment for the NHL in that it was making its grand return to ESPN, which it hadn't been there in a long time. ESPN covered the Stanley Cup Finals, and TNT was also TNT or TBS. I forget which one aired the games, but Turner Networks were also a part of that deal. A lot of people were really excited about ESPN getting it back. ESPN put a lot of money into, you know, producing and creating hockey content. So this was a huge little bit of like injection into the sport. How have you seen the response and changes to both the game and the hobby market? Has it had any impact whatsoever that you've noticed?
Well, I think it definitely has, but we're just really starting to see what the impact will be, and it'll be a multi-year process. You're 100% right, though. It was ridiculous before last year to find hockey games. They were buried on, we kind of joke on our show about being on like the outdoor turkey hunting channel is basically where, you know, channel 4,370, and you might be able to find a game. And as you know, right, it's so important. And I think now for hockey, especially because there's a huge group of young stars that are really exciting, that are really marketable. And if people never get to see them play, it's impossible to build hype around those people, for right? Sure. They're just mythical creatures that live in newspapers somewhere or on webs, on blogs that you've heard of, but have never seen actually play in their sport.
Yeah, I mean, there's just something to be said. If you're not watching somebody play, it can impact the way that you want to invest in memorabilia, whatever it might be. You know, you're not as inclined to go ahead and buy a jersey of somebody if you never get to see how awesome they are at what they do. It's just different than reading about it. I mean, it's great that YouTube exists now, so you can find a lot of clips, but of course you have to be inclined to do that. As a hockey fan, were you happy with the changes to the hockey presentation this last year? I've heard a little bit of mixed reviews, but mostly really positive.
Yeah, you know, I'm more in a wait and see approach. There were some things that I didn't love, but I see what they're trying to do, especially on the TNT side. So from basketball, right, Inside the NBA has been one of the most successful studio shows that have probably ever existed. And to some extent, I think hockey tried to copy it, but they did it in a smart way. They put the great one up there, right? So you have the greatest player that's ever lived. Then right next to him, you have Paul Bissonnette from the Spit and Chicklets podcast, who is probably the biggest hockey podcast and definitely drives the younger crowd to it. Shane, the most important thing is that the games are on TV and that they're exposing the game to more people. And then I think the second part of that formula that's super important is hockey's also to some extent been a prisoner of its legacy, a lot like baseball has been, in that hockey players were expected to be robots, right? Just like a baseball player. If you hit a home run and you show any amount of celebration, you're going to be eating a fastball the next time you come up to the plate, right? In hockey, if you do anything that puts yourself outside or above the team, you're going to be in a fight and being punched in the face the next shift out there. And what that really did is it held the leagues back from marketing the personalities of their players, right? I think of, like, I'm not a kid anymore, but I think of how baseball's evolved, and you look at like a Ronald Acuna or Fernando Tatis or Vlad Guerrero Jr. These guys are, they just look cool.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, what 12-year-old
awesome.
Isn't going to want to look up to that and be inspired or motivated. And hockey's finally getting around to doing the same thing. They've got some young personalities like a Trevor Zegras out of Anaheim, who's a little quirky, but all in a good way. Here in Minnesota, where I'm from, our team, the Minnesota Wild, has done an amazing job of doing commercials that are titled "It's Not Weird, It's Wild," showing kind of the quirky nature of the players and the team. And I just think that that's going to have a dramatic impact on bringing people into the sport.
The name is escaping me right now. Maybe you'll know what I'm talking about, but there was a big moment last year, maybe it even happened twice, where a hockey player was behind the goal and he sort of scooped the puck up over and flipped it over the net and then in for a goal. And that was something that was all over the highlights, but there was a lot of the same chatter about, like, that's not the right way to play, you know, the same exact stuff you hear in baseball. So that parallel is really good to make, because last year the White Sox, I forget who it was, but somebody hit a home run on 3-0 pitch and his own manager was like upset with him for doing that, which is like, let the kids play, man. Let them have fun. Let us get mad at the opposing players doing that, right? Let the fans be the ones to, like, you shouldn't do that, but they should. Go out there and have a good time. Be a personality. You know, basketball is so good at marketing its players and allowing them to sort of be who they are for the most part. You know, football really, reeled it in for a while when they were cutting back on the celebrations and whatnot. But man, baseball was brutal at it. It's interesting to hear that hockey has been sort of, you know, dealing with that same sort of issue.
Well, I'll make a parallel back to one of your passions, collecting wrestling, right? If the WWE only had faces and no heels, it wouldn't be any fun.
I think the same is
needed in all the other sports too, right? Let a guy show his personality, just like you said. Let the other fans hate him,
right?
Because the next time that team comes to town, there's a whole different energy about that game that wouldn't be there if everyone is just supposed to be baby-faced robots, right?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, wrestling had that actually. You know, when the era of Hogan and and that sort of late 80s, you know, pushing in the 90s era, it was just getting stale. And you saw a lot of fans sort of leaving the product. It just wasn't nearly as popular. And then Shawn Michaels, Nash and Hall, what they did in WCW, they started to make the product a lot edgier, a lot more realistic in terms of what you were seeing. The feud that Michaels had with Bret Hart, that is really what brought wrestling back into the mainstream, into the ever popular Attitude Era. You know, you have to find ways to continue to evolve. And when sports just cling to tradition, I mean, tradition's fun. Tradition's romantic. It's great to sort of talk about, you know, how things were and how things should be. And there's something to say about respect to a certain extent, but man, you have to evolve or you're going to fade away.
Yeah, I see tradition like a double-edged sword, where there's a lot of benefits and then there's some definitive drawbacks too.
Right. All right, so let's talk about the upcoming season, because again, depending, I usually get these out on Monday night, so we'll be slightly ahead of when the actual season starts, but even still, tomorrow on Tuesday, there's only, I think, two games, if I remember that correctly. I think the Kings are one of them, but don't quote me on that. But anyway, so the season is here. What sort of storylines do we have to look forward to heading into the season? I mean, one thing I read recently was that a Canadian team has not won the Stanley Cup since 1993. I know that's kind of a big deal. Is there any shot at that? Or is there any other really big storylines that we should be looking forward to?
Yeah, there's tons of stuff. And that's why I just can't wait for the season to start. So on the Canadian side, there's really three teams that have a realistic shot. It'd be the Edmonton Oilers, the Calgary Flames, and the Toronto Maple Leafs. They've all had a pretty decent amount of offseason change. So it's not like they're just bringing the same team back from last year. In both the case of Edmonton and Toronto, they've switched their goalies, which was a big deal. And then Calgary's had even more change than that. So there's a lot of unanswered questions that come with each of those teams, but all three are really, really good. And so, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if a Canadian team won the cup this year.
Okay. Okay. And then correct me if I'm wrong on this one, but McDavid plays for the Oilers, right?
McDavid plays for the Oilers. And then the leading goal scorer for last year, Austin Matthews, plays for Toronto. And Okay. They're both pretty young yet. McDavid's only 25. Mm. So he's just starting to get into really the start of his peak. But, you know, we talked about the Mount Rushmore of hockey. If either of those guys ever wanted to at least be in the conversation, really within the next couple years, they're going to have to start making some serious damage in the playoffs and winning a cup. And so I think that is one of the big questions. And then on the flip side of that is there's also a really intriguing prospect that will be in the draft next year. His name is Connor Bedard. And much like you're hearing in talk of the NBA right now with Victor Wembanyama, there's a lot of teams that many people are thinking are tanking for Connor Bedard. Like the Chicago Blackhawks would be one of them, who seem to be trading away all their good young players.
Right.
Because this Connor Bedard kid was granted exceptional status to play in Canadian juniors at 15 versus the traditional minimum age of 16. And it's just been lighting it up from a junior's perspective. So it's kind of, that'll be a fun storyline to watch. We have Alexander Ovechkin from the Capitals. He's close. It's not guaranteed to one of the biggest grail records in all of hockey. It would be Wayne Gretzky's goal record, career goal record of 894 goals.
Wow.
Ovi is at 780 right now. So he's still 114 short of that mark. So he'll need two or three or four years probably to get there.
Okay.
He is 37. And so he's kind of getting into this. I'm not trying to compare him to Tom Brady, but just from an age perspective, so last year at 36, he had 50 goals. Nobody that was 36 years old had ever scored 50 goals. So if he's going to score 35 goals over the next 3 years and break Wayne Gretzky's goal record, he's going to have a level of production at his age that literally nobody's ever had. But many people think that he can and eventually will do it. And this is a record that you would compare to like the Maris home run record that Judge just broke, that people thought would never be touched.
Wow. So again, a lot of ignorance on my end here, but 50 goals you said he'd scored at his age had never been done before. But where does that rank for anybody of any age in a season? I assume that's pretty good. That sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah, it depends on the era. So when Gretzky played, there was more goal production per players. To give you a little bit of context, so Austin Matthews led the NHL in scoring last year. And I believe, I don't know the exact number, it was around like between 60 and 65 goals.
Okay.
So still a really high level of production for Ovechkin. But he's in the, and that's where I make the Brady comparison, only in that at his age, he's doing stuff right now that there really isn't a precedence for. So it's a little, it makes it a little hard to project what is likely to come over the next couple of years. But that's that's only going to ramp up. And it would be a great thing for hockey getting back to growing the game, because there will be a huge amount of attention that will come to the sport if he's able to keep producing and get close to that record.
Yeah, I mean, you would start to wrap entire storylines just around his chase. I mean, just look at Albert Pujols this year in baseball as well as Aaron Judge chasing down Maris. I mean, once he started to get close to 700, all eyes started to turn that direction. I mean, it was also a storyline that kind of snuck up on everybody, which is kind of cool. Nobody expected Pujols to have the year that he had, especially since it was going to be his last year, and that made it obviously a little more sort of sweet to watch happen, which is cool. But man, when those hallowed records get chased down, it's a whole different ball game in terms of viewership and excitement and all those sorts of things. So out of curiosity, where does Ovi's cards type, you know, typically sort of run? I assume that they're a bit more on the high end, you know, on the price wise.
Yeah, definitely. So I don't know. This is more just kind of, I guess, how I look at it. I'm not sure that this is official or I guess declared by the hobby, but his rookie year is 2005. It also coincides with Mario Lemieux, or not Sidney Crosby, sorry. So they both came in the same year. And really, to me, that ushered in the modern era of hockey cards. I mean, that's really class. Where you really start to see your RPA cards versus more kind of the 90s sort of treatment or configuration of how sports cards were made and rookie cards were treated. But yeah, they're up there and they're going to go crazy if he continues to approach the record. And certainly if he breaks the record, it'll... who knows? Sure. And so if you're a Ovechkin believer, you know, the train has already left the station and you're probably going to want to get on as soon as you can.
Yeah, right. I mean, I'm sure it's already high enough as it is. But yeah, if that happens, I'm sure there's the whole to the moon aspect that'll happen. Just like what happened with Pujols. I mean, a lot of people considered Pujols to be an undervalued sort of legend, especially because his time with the Angels was so much of a letdown compared to his first 10 seasons or whatever it was with the Cardinals. And his prices weren't where you would expect a guaranteed Hall of Famer to be, but man, did that change in the last 4 months or whatever it was. So yeah, I can see something similar happening with Ovi.
Well, aside from winning the World Series, there's really no, I think, more of a romantic ending to a career or a story than you could have than he did. So yeah, you know, and from a hobby 100%. Perspective, it was huge.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing, going back to St. Louis where it all started and, you know, feeling rejuvenated after his little run with the Dodgers last year. I mean, the whole thing is pretty awesome. Plus, Pujols is so likable. You know, I don't think anybody has a bad thing to say about Pujols, which is great. Ovi's pretty liked too, right? Isn't he a pretty, like, a popular guy as far as I'm aware?
I think so. There's a little bit of a... when it comes to, and I honestly don't know a lot about this. I haven't taken the time to really examine it, but it's something that you kind of hear in hobby circles that there's been a little bit of a Russian bias sometimes towards Russian superstars where they're not quite as chased or their values are a little bit less. But I think he's transcended that.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like it from a casual aspect, like that's a name that I know. So I would assume that it's somebody that has sort of transcended, as you put it.
Yeah, if you think of like who are the active, most sought after players, there's no way he's not in somebody's top 10. And it would be hard to have him probably out of your top 7. So okay. He's very, very relevant from a hobby perspective.
Okay. Yeah, that makes total sense from my ignorant standpoint. But all right, man. All right. So I want to do another little game with you. I sort of sent you the rundown and I like the suggestion of doing a top five. So every week I do a top five on my show, and it's really evolved from week to week. It started with doing like the greatest jersey numbers of the episode that I was on. And then when I have guests on, I always try to steer it towards something that the guests can really bring some of their own unique interest and knowledge to. And with you, obviously that makes sense to do hockey cards. So I thought it would be fun to do the top five players to look forward to in this coming season. And I'm going to let you run with this. There's nothing that I can add to the hockey conversation. So this is going to be your show, but I'm really curious about your top five from 5 to 1, what you think we should be looking forward to for whatever reason, however you want to define it.
Sure. Well, I'll probably start with a couple of guys that we've talked about in Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews, and maybe group them. I'm going to try to squeeze as many players into top five as I possibly can. So
I love it. Let's do it.
Just going to have to probably live with that. And these are, I put these guys in the category of they're already superstars. They're already, nobody questions how good a player is, but now it's down to, can you win a cup?
Right. Okay.
And in hockey, it's maybe a little unfair because it is really a team sport. A great example is McDavid last year in the playoffs was amazing. There's nothing Draisaitl was crazy, right? And there's nothing that they could have done. They just had a bad goalie situation, and that really hurt them.
So correct me if I'm wrong. They had, I don't know if it ended up this way because of like whatever happened in the Stanley Cup finals, but they were leading all players in total points with just between the two of them, even though they were eliminated early on. I don't know if that ended up holding true, but they were like absolutely dominating, weren't they?
Oh yeah, they were brilliant. And Leon Draisaitl was playing on one leg. He would go out and play, have an amazing shift, and then he would like be crawling back to the bench in between. And, you know, it was really kind of a heroic performance, I guess. But so I would kind of group Matthews and McDavid and can these superstars take it to the next step and win that cup.
Okay.
Then there's the player that we really haven't mentioned next. My next one would be Cale Makar. He was the golden boy of last season. He was the great breakout performer. He's a defenseman, and traditionally defensemen are treated like running backs in football, right?
Right.
We value them, but from a hobby perspective, we don't really value them.
Sure. He Avalanche, right?
He's Avalanche.
And one of Colorado.
Won the Norris Trophy, which goes to the best defenseman of the year, and then also won the Stanley Cup. But he's kind of ushering in or symbolic of this new era of NHL defensemen that are really offensive. And they say play a 200-foot game. And what was crazy about last year is that you heard when he was playing on national TV, like we've talked about, constant references to Bobby Orr.
Okay.
And that would be sacrilege for most other. You don't, you know, that's the highest praise an NHL defenseman can get. And so he just had an amazing year. And what I think is really interesting is I'm not sure how you follow that up. Hmm. He's very young. So he should only get better. I think he's maybe 23, 22, something like that.
Wow. Okay.
He could even be a little bit younger. I'm kind of blanking on that. But when it seems like literally you've had the perfect season, it on one end, it kind of feels, is there only one way this can go?
Right.
But I wouldn't be surprised if he finds some way to build upon that either. And so I put him as my number two.
There's a good analogy there with a lot of conversation about Aaron Judge. You know, we've talked about him already, but he's headed into his free agent season too. Can he ever repeat what he just did, chasing down the triple crown, hitting, I think 62 home runs is where he ended up. And somebody's going to give him a massive, massive contract. But has he peaked? Where else can he go? But, you know, it's always interesting when somebody hits those sorts of highs. And that's fun. That's going to be an interesting one to watch with Cale Makar, right?
Yep, Cale Makar. Okay. My number three is a player named Jonathan Huberdeau, who was traded in the offseason from the Florida Panthers to the Calgary Flames. So as I mentioned earlier, Calgary is one of the teams that could, you know, should be one of the strongest in the Western Conference and definitely has a chance to win the Stanley Cup. Huberdeau had played his entire career in Florida, had all of their records, and had a great year last year. I think there were maybe six or seven players that scored 100 points. So points in hockey are the combination of goals and assists. And he's basically an assist machine, had something like 85 assists last year. And Calgary, it was a mega trade, right? Calgary traded their superstar, Matthew Tkachuk, for him, and he was shocked. He had spent 8 or 9 years in Florida. I don't think he was super happy. It seems like he's embraced Calgary now. But here's a case of the old chip on the shoulder.
Sure.
Right? You get into your career, 8, 9 years, everything feels a little routine. Now there's a big jolt to the system. Now you've got a little bit of anger fueling your play. And so I'm really interested to see how he performs. Fourth guy is a guy named Moritz Seider, who is a defenseman for the Detroit Red Wings. He was the Calder Trophy winner last year, which is the, in hockey, we have all these crazy trophies that we give instead of saying Rookie of the Year, sure. Right? We have to make it really confusing. And it goes back to this is, I think, one of the great parts of the hockey tradition is they have these amazing trophies that have been around for 70, 80, 90, 100 years.
Yeah, and that's phenomenal. The Stanley Cup, I mean, come on. It's the greatest trophy in sports, period. There's no question 100%. About it.
So Seider was the Rookie of the Year last year. He had a really good season for a rookie. He's got a lot of hype, right? So he's proud, either him or Cole Caulfield out of last year's Young Guns rookie class really kind of drove the market. And it'll be really interesting to follow his season if he can take that next step into, you know, he's still a little more hype and potential than production, even though he had a really good year last year. But if he takes that next step, I think that his market could grow quite a bit. And then the last guy, we had to throw a goalie in there because Troy, our co-host, is a goalie coach. And there's a goalie who's been around for a little bit now from the Nashville Predators named UC Saros. And we just kind of both feel like he is really primed to have a great year and take his play to that next level. One of the things that Troy talks about a lot is goalies peak a lot older than a skater would in hockey. So it's not uncommon at 27, 28, maybe even 29 years old for a goalie to really hit their form, where now, like in a lot of other sports in the NHL, we're expecting rookies to come in at 18, 19 and have impact. Right. And so goalies are still getting a little bit more of that development leash. And we think that he could be definitely one to watch.
Awesome.
How'd I do?
I did phenomenal, man. That's all great stuff. A lot of names on there that I'm not super familiar with, which is great as well. I'm very, very interested to go in and look into some more of those. The hockey thing is fascinating because as a Kings fan, you know, Jonathan Quick breaking onto the scene back in 2012, that area when they won 2 out of 3 cups. Man, that dude was a game changer. Be nice if we can get back to that form, though, and I could pretend I've been a fan the whole time.
Well, you've got a couple interesting young guys. We already mentioned Quentin Byfield. Mm-hmm. And then in last year's extended series, one of the more popular or chased young guns was a player named Alex Turcotte.
Okay.
Who is showing some promise too. He might be a little ways off, but you know, there is some hope there for some young talent.
Sure. You and I were actually talking about this a little bit when we were just kind of Instagram messaging back and forth, but Byfield's been a little underwhelming, right? He hasn't quite lived up to the sort of lofty expectations he had when he came out. If I remember correctly, was he the second taken overall? I know he was really high when he was taken.
He was the second overall pick. And I think if people are inclined to give him any sort of a break, it has to do with all the COVID
sure
stuff, sure. Right? That the whole world was going in, you know, dealing with. And for players that really entered into the NHL or the NHL development program around that time, you could make an argument that it wasn't the fairest of circumstances or most standard of circumstances. But either way you cut it, this is a big, big year for him. Right. Kind of a make or break.
Okay. Yeah.
He's got a lot of talent. That's for sure.
Well, I look forward to seeing what might happen there. Do you, before I let you go, I guess, do you have any predictions for the season? Anybody you think is going to, any teams you think might take it? You think Colorado's going to repeat? What was it, the Lightning before them, you know, had won, was it back-to-back and were chasing three in a row, I think is what it was. Will they get back up top? What do you think about the outlook for the best success for the year? Are the Kings going to get back there?
Probably not this year. And in the Eastern Conference,
podcast
I really
is
like,
over. Forget this.
Sorry about that. I really like the Rangers. And then this is such a homer pick, but I just love our Minnesota Wild team. And so it's a long shot. I know that most people would put Colorado or Calgary or probably even Edmonton over them. But
okay,
I love my guy Kaprizov, and I got to stick with my group.
Awesome. I love it, man. Homer picks all the way. Let's do it. Let's do it. I love it. But Josh, dude, thank you so much. Like I, you know, said over and over, I don't know a whole lot about hockey, and especially less about the hockey world. And I assume some people listening to this might be in the same boat as me. And I love this little sort of like primer for the season coming up. I love the show. I love what you guys are doing. Before I let you go, Josh, plug away, man. Where can people find you? If people want to come learn more about hockey and hockey cards specifically, how can they find you and Troy, the Hockey Cards Gong Show?
Yeah, all you have to do on any podcast app is search Hockey Cards Gong Show. I guess the one thing I might mention is we've started and we're two episodes into a special series that we're doing called Hockey Cards 101. And part of our goal and part of our mission really as a podcast is to help do our even a small part to grow the hockey space. And so if anyone is interested in hockey, but maybe intimidated by not understanding the nuances of it or is new to collecting, what we're trying to do is really break it down and produce a series. Troy and I will talk about, let's make a series that we would have wanted 2 years ago when we knew nothing.
Awesome. Yeah, great, great stuff. And you guys are on Instagram, right? It's Hockey Cards Gong Show is the same handle for people to find you. A lot of great stuff there. I love the stuff you guys share on there. You know, I can go on Card Ladder or whatever and see a lot of these different numbers, but the way you guys break it down is visually cool and really informative. The show is fantastic. You just announced you guys are going to two times a week for the season, which is awesome. I will be listening. I encourage everybody who wants to learn anything about hockey or if you're a hockey fan looking for hockey content, that's the show, Hockey Cards Gong Show. Josh, thank you so much for coming on.
Awesome, Shane. Thank you very much. It was a treat.
Once again, thank you to Josh. Thank you to the Hockey Cards Gong Show. What a great conversation that was. I am more excited for hockey than I've been since the Kings won 2 out of 3 back when I lived in Los Angeles and got to go to the games. I really think I'm going to be paying a lot more attention this year. You saw I already, in that conversation, I already bought a card. Quentin Byfield's rookie card, an exquisite. My only exquisite. You know, there's no, LeBron exquisite, but it is what it is, man. I love it. I'm excited for hockey. I'm excited that it's coming back, and I hope you are going to pay some attention to the ice this year as well. But that's it, ladies and gentlemen. That's all I got. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for checking out what the Hockey Cards Gong Show has to say. You should definitely pop over and see them on their proper show. Thank you. Good night.